This is the Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage show by Mark Helm. Nothing Mark shares with you guarantees your success in the self-storage business. This is for informational purposes only. There are no calls to action and nothing said or implied is a call for investment money into self-storage or any other asset class. You are responsible for your success in the self-storage business or any endeavor in life. Enjoy the show. And here is Mark Helm.
Hello, this is Mark Helm, the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I've been in the self-storage business since 1995. Been through a lot of cycles and a lot of ups and downs, and I've watched this industry evolve. And today I want to talk about the five mistakes that I see beginners, even some seasoned people make, as they get in or grow their self-storage business. Now, I've made every one of these mistakes, so I'll talk from experience. So thank you for being with me today. And the stakes have never been higher. You know, it's one thing to make some of these mistakes when interest rates are 4% and construction costs are $30 a square foot. But today, with high interest rates, high construction costs, a lot more product than there used to be on the market, the stakes have never been higher. So it's really critical that you set yourself up to win in this fantastic business of self-storage. Now, I'm going to talk about these issues somewhat in order, but just know that any one of them can set you back. But let's start with the number one problem I see a lot of self-storage people still doing today, and that's location, visibility. The number one problem I see is a lot of people put a project into service that does not have good visibility in your market area or your trade area. I don't care what anyone says, the storage business is a retail business. Now, I know there's a conversation out there and an argument, a valid one, that the internet can drive people to your business. Maybe that's true. I don't want to win that argument. Here's what I do know. At any given moment in my trade area, which is usually 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles within my facility. In our portfolio, 86% of our customers live within 3.2 miles of our storage facility on average. So I know where my customers are. I want to be visible to 100% of my customers. Now here's what I know, at any given moment, 10%, 12% are going to need self-storage. Some who need it already have it. But I want 100% if possible of my market area to see me and know where I'm at. Then when they do go online, what do you think will be one of the first or one of the first facilities that they reach out to? That's right, my facility. I want as much of my market knowing where I'm at and what we're about and what we look like. That way when they go online, they'll click me and I can be the first one if possible. Now we track where our new leases come from. And today, it used to be number one, but today what we call drive-by is still two or three on the list of what has people rent from us. Even if they go to Google, to go onto our website and move themselves in and not make a phone call, they recognize us because they've driven by. And then when we talk to them, they'll say, well, I see your place all the time when I take my kids to school. Be visible in your trade area so everybody knows where you are. Mistake number one I see being made, and I've made that mistake. My slowest lease up project was on a project that had no visibility from a main road. There's a whole story behind it. I'm not gonna go into it now. Suffice it to say, I just didn't do my due diligence very well. It's a Butson Expressway. I thought I'd have expressway visibility, but I didn't get it because I couldn't get the same signs that everyone else had. So that project took me over a year longer to lease up than we anticipated, and I had the distinct pleasure of making a lot of the mortgage payments out of my pocket because the facility wasn't funding it. You want visibility. Number two mistake I see people still making, is not being in a good trade area, a good location, a healthy self-storage market at the time. You know, let's just face it, there is a lot more self-storage out there than there used to be. I can fix a lot of problems with an existing facility, but I can't fix a trade area being overbuilt. I just can't solve that problem. Times and people solve that problem. And I don't want to wait for time and people while I'm making the mortgage payment. Now, there's a lot of subscription services like Radius Plus or Yardi that can give you glimpses into virtually any address in the country and tell you what the supply demand is, or pretty close, it's fairly accurate, can tell you what rental rates are, and you can get a glimpse into a trade area and know if it will probably work. At the very least, you'll see some red flags. So, not being in a healthy trade area. And what makes a healthy trade area? Well, there's a lot of factors that could go into that, but let's cover the big three. One is population growth. I don't even look for a specific number in population. I've heard people say they want to see 50,000 people within a 3-mile or a 5-mile radius. Well, that's fine. I've had a lot of very successful projects with a lot less than that. But what I do want to see is population growth. I don't even need to see big population growth. I just want to see that the area that I'm focused on, that more people are moving in and being born than are moving out and dying. Why? Because population growth will solve any mistakes I make in buying the project, running the project, or developing the project. Next, I look for median income. I've had people all the time ask me, what's a good median income? Well, I can't tell you. It depends on where you're looking. In some southeastern markets of our country, for example, $45,000 is a good median income. In San Francisco, $100,000 would probably be close to poverty. So I used to tell people that what I would do is I would figure out what in the city or market or county I'm in, what is the average median income, and then I just want to see my trade area, that or the facility I'm looking at or the location I'm looking at, be equal to that or above it. Today I'm focused, 10-15% above the average median income. Those are the trade areas I want to go into. What happens is, if you're in a location where you're below the average median income, the average length of stay for a customer is shorter. And when the average length of stay is shorter, your marketing costs go up because you're re-leasing that same space more often in a 1-year, 2-year, 3-year time period. And if you're in lease up, sometimes you're going to have to rent that same unit 2-3 times before you hit stabilization. That's not fun. That gets old real quick. So you want to have good median income in your trade area. I'm looking today 60-65% above the average median income for whatever market area my trade area is in. That's good for the income. And obviously, the last main thing to look at is supply demand. The good thing about self-storage is very local. In other words, 86% of our customers live 3.2 miles on average, based on the markets we're in, from our storage facilities. So I know where my customer base is. I know how many people are in that trade area. And it's not hard to quantify today how much self-storage is in that trade area. So you can real quickly get a supply-demand ratio, and you'll know if that trade area can absorb more space. And with the subscription services today, I can look in there and I can tell you, for a 10x10 climate control, for example, what the average rent in that trade area has been for the last 12 months. And I underwrite to that. Now, I hear a lot of people say, but I've got good marketing. Well, great. My experience is you're not going to beat an overbuilt market with good marketing. I've had a lot of people say, well, we'll have better customer service than our competition. Great. You can't pay the mortgage payment with good customer service. You need tenants renting units in your building. And in an overbuilt market today, with the way the competition is and the way the pricing is set up, the only way I have ever successfully seen or brought new people into an overbuilt market is by lowering my rental rates, especially if I'm in lease-up. You don't want to put more square footage in an overbuilt market. It gets old very quick. The number three error I see is not getting a good feasibility report. Always get a good feasibility report, especially if you're bringing more square footage online. What's a good feasibility report? Well, there's feasibility reports and then there's good feasibility reports. I don't consider a desktop a good feasibility report. I want someone who's trained in how to analyze self-storage. I want them to go to that trade area. I want them to go to the competition. I want them to go pull up records in the county. I want to see what's coming online. And I want them to tell me what the strengths and the weaknesses are of my competition as they see them. I can even get a good unit mix from a good feasibility report. Look, you don't want to skimp on a feasibility report. Yes, I know you can get desktops and whatnot for $3,500. And I know that $8,000 to $10,000 is a lot to spend for a full feasibility report. But I'm not going to make a $4 million, $5 million, $10 million bet on a desktop feasibility report. Whatever the cost of that project is by the time you're done, that's what you're betting if you don't have a good feasibility report. Make sure that it is one that the person doing it is one your lender approves. If you're interested in who I use, you can go to my website, creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com. I have a resource page with a lot of the vendors that I use. Amanda Helfridge on that resource page is my go-to feasibility report person. Now, it has been a long time since I've been able to buy an existing storage facility and just tweak it a little bit and improve it so that I can get the returns I need. They're out there. I just haven't been able to buy one. So I'm always doing a value add play, and usually the value add plays I do include some form of construction, expansion, new construction, or converting an existing building. So I'm usually bringing new square footage into the market, and I want to make dang sure that market can absorb it, and what rental rates I will realistically be able to get. I'm not going to inflate them because I'm good at marketing, or I'm not going to absorb faster than my feasibility report says because I'm good at marketing. I'm going to go with what that feasibility report says, but you got to get a good one. The fourth big mistake I see today, and I would have had this on the list 10 years ago, 7 years ago, is not understanding your competition. The storage business has become very sophisticated today, especially with all types of revenue programs. You've got dynamic pricing, you've got value pricing, you've got all the online marketing that there is to deal with. And it's really critical to be able to get to know what your competition, how sophisticated they are, what they're doing for marketing, and how they're getting new customers in their storage facilities. So if you're in a market, let's say, with a lot of sophisticated players, REITs, a lot of funds owning storage, for example, and dynamic pricing is being used to get new customers, you pretty much are going to have to do that today. And you're going to have to underwrite your pro forma to do that, or else you're going to miss your revenue numbers significantly. So understanding the competition, what it's doing, That's critical. The old days of just going to a website, looking at your competition's prices for a 10 by 10, take one or two facilities. Usually people will look for the highest rate they can see, and that's the one they use in their underwriting. Those days are over. That's one of the good things about at least the subscription service we use, Radius Plus. I can tell you what the average has been, and I can see trends in that trade area, and I underwrite to those trends. If I've got to give 2 months free, I underwrite the 2 months free. And the last big mistake I see people make is once they get in the self-storage business, and I've talked about this quite a bit, are payment plans. If a customer gets behind and can't pay their bill, don't let them pay half and try to catch up later. The number one rule is never, never, never do a payment plan. How often should you do a payment plan? Never do a payment plan. I can take one look, depending on the software people are using. You can give me a random daily close, and I can look at that, and within 30 seconds, I can tell you if that facility does payment plans. I've seen people with 50, 60, 70% of their potential monthly income dribbling in, gummed up through these payment plans. And I hear, well, it's better to get something than nothing. No, it isn't. You are much better off letting that tenant walk and collecting zero than you are putting them on a payment plan. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to the bank. It's not fair to your partners. My suggestion is come up with a policy. Don't use this because it was what ours was. You can make up whatever policy you want. But our policy was when somebody's 30 days and they go into lien, we send the lien notice out and we start the auction process and we call them or text them or email them, whatever it takes to get in contact with them. And we tell them, look, you pay me 50% of what you owe me, you can take your stuff and go. If you can't pay 50% of what you owe me, we're going to auction. And then I put that unit back into service. And you're way better off doing that. Even if it takes marketing costs and time to rent up, believe me, you're better off doing that than having your cash flow dribble in slowly. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. Just don't do it. So those are the mistakes I still see people making out there today getting in the self-storage business. It's a fantastic business. Those are mistakes I've made. But the thing is, the stakes have never been higher. Any one of those mistakes can be a fatal mistake for you today, given the interest rate, high cost of construction, and the amount of supply out there. So it's a great business to be in. Just get in smart, get in strategically, and get help in coaching and training if you need it. This business changed the trajectory of my life and my family's life and the lives of many of the people that I've worked with over the years. It can change your life too. Just be strategic and smart about it. And those are the five mistakes not to make. So we just sped your learning curve up as you're getting in this self-storage business. So thank you very much. I look forward to hearing from you. My name is Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy, which houses a lot of the training that I offer people getting in or growing their self-storage business. You can find out more about it at creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com. I look forward to connecting with you down the road.